Dylan Larkin out of the University of Michigan, representing the Detroit Red Wings as a 19-year-old rookie. Here he goes.
There he goes. Good stride. You see he got the top speed right off those first two strides. And look at that power going around that first net. And again, this is right now. Oh, no, he gets slipped. So the ice did hamper him a little bit, just like Pierre asked him. And he still did it. That's what you call speed. He still slipped and he still beat Mike Gardner. That is amazing. That is energetic and youth for you. As a rookie, Detroit fans have a lot to look forward to in this young superstar, Dylan Larkin.
Welcome to Winging It in Motown Radio, everybody. Small crew today. Myself, Jeff, here hosting, along with JJ and Kyle. Gentlemen, how are you?
It's the best night ever.
It's the best night ever. We'll go with that, as always.
And I hope everyone who's listening during the day is having the best day ever. One guy who had the best weekend ever, or close to it, is Dylan Larkin. Seems like he had a hell of a weekend at the All-Star game and festivities in Nashville. I think we should just start and get right into it with the All-Star break. John Scott's a hero. Dylan Larkin's officially the fastest skater in NHL history. Just what was your favorite part of everything? Or what were your thoughts on all of it?
JJ, you go first.
Yeah, JJ, you first.
Geez,
you're the seasoned veteran.
Picking out a favorite part is so incredibly difficult because everything worked so well. Even the things that the NHL completely cocked up. I have to say, I thought the 3-on-3 tournament format was great on its own and would have made for a fun All-Star game weekend without everything else that happened. I think that really worked. They played actual defense there. I was really invested in the games because I really wanted to see the Atlantic team win that first game, so I really gave a shit. I really wanted to see John Scott win that second game, so I gave a shit. Championship game, it was honestly an either or, no matter which team won, I was going to enjoy myself. But really, it was the story of John Scott and how all of the bullshit from the last few months culminated into what was really an amazingly fun weekend for hockey again. Really reminded me of what I love about the sport, and I know that. John Scott is maybe getting a little unfairly gilded for essentially what he's done in his career, but I don't care. I'm full on giving him credit for being a changed man, and I think that the way that he comported himself, the way that the players came around him, the way that the teams backed him up for the MVP voting, they're all jumping on Twitter saying, vote for Scott for the MVP after the NHL announced that he wasn't even going to be a finalist. They freaking picked him up on the ice. It was Rudy and Gladiator all wrapped in one, except for instead of a tiny useless guy, Rudy was a giant, mostly useless guy. And it wasn't even crap that he won it. He actually deserved the MVP award. He could have given it to a lot of people, but he played really well, and I think that John Scott, as the captain of the Pacific team, was a very big reason the Pacific team won. It was great. And that's not even taking into consideration how freaking amazing Dylan Larkin was throughout the whole thing. He won the fastest skater. He scored on his two breakaways, three assists in the first game. And then he was basically the one that was, although the Atlantic team didn't win any or didn't score any points in the final, he was the closest one. He was the most dangerous player on the ice for that team at 19 years old. So, yeah, it was a great weekend.
Yeah, I think my most favorite part about it was that the entire narrative of this was that the All-Star game is made for making fans and young fans, kids who watch the game to watch all the All-Stars play, the Taylor Halls, the Patrick Kanes, the Eric Carlsons, whatever. You can go on and on about that, but I think, and the narrative was that John Scott isn't going to help that. And in the end, John Scott had the last laugh with that, because I think that his presence, his overall mindset persona, and along with all the other players around it, it made me, as a seasoned hockey fan who has loved hockey my entire life pretty much, it was like, God, this sport is so great. Like, this is awesome. Even though John Scott is no more than a knuckle-dragging face puncher. Like, I mean, that's what he is. It was a really great story, and it was a really great event. I think, and I want to say this right now, absolutely zero credit should go to the NHL for this. Absolutely zero. I think the fans... No.
They get credit for the format.
Okay, they get credit for the format, but... Okay, cool. I mean, you can put lipstick on a pig all you want, but it's just the players, the fans, the entire, you know, I think the city of Nashville did a really good job with it. I think that the major culprit of this entire weekend was not because of the NHL. The format was really good. The 3-on-3, I think, was exciting to watch. It wasn't like last year when, like, I don't know. I can't remember exactly how many goals were scored last year, but there was a crap ton. This year it was a lot different. The final was, what, one goal?
Yeah, 1-0.
And how exciting was that? I mean, I thought it was awesome. You know, it kept me watching. It wasn't like, oh, hey, scored another goal. Oh, hey, they scored another goal. It was more of like, I'm waiting to see the other goal, and it wasn't there. And it was just like at the end when you get to see John Scott lift it up, and you know he bringing his kids out onto the ice, and him hugging Daryl Sutter's son. It was just really cool to watch, and I think it was really inspiring. And then going on to Dylan Larkin, yeah, I mean, it's nothing new to us. We know that he's amazing and he's blazing fast. So I'm hoping that this entire event will give Dylan Larkin some like stupid good confidence, and he just comes out and rips the NHL apart, because I think we need it. But yeah, awesome. The best all-star game I've ever watched.
Yeah, bar none, in any sport.
Yeah, ever. I mean, like the same night, like what was the Pro Bowl going on, and like I didn't see anything about it. Zero. Not a damn thing.
Well, I will give the NHL credit, because the format I thought was excellent. You guys said what you said about John Scott. I agree with everything. I was invested in seeing who wins. The fact that the games were short, you had the 2 10-minute periods or whatever, it didn't feel like it was dragging out. I'm like, all right, I'm ready for this to be over. It was quick, which was good. And you had something to like still look forward to as far as the next games and everything. The $1 million being on the line was cool, because the players actually tried at the end, because they wanted that extra whatever $100,000 or whatever it was divided amongst them.
Right.
And I'll give the NHL a little more credit that despite like maybe the last few actual All-Star games I can't remember what happened in them, but they did the draft and they introduced that, and that was cool for a couple years, and then it ran its course, and then they changed it up again, and they didn't just stick with status quo. And I'm very curious just moving forward. Like, you saw the NHL introduced the draft, and then the Pro Bowl the last 2 years has done, like, a draft with Team Jerry Rice and Team Irvin and whatnot. So I'm, like, waiting, like, what is the Pro Bowl next year going to do? A couple mini, like, 5-on-5 football games or something that?
They'll play 7-7.
Yeah, 7-on-7. So
I like that.
It'd be interesting. And even though you didn't watch the Pro Bowl, it's still, what, I think it rated a 5.5, which was the lowest of all time.
Yeah.
And the NHL All-Star game was like a 1.17, which was, like, I believe, their highest of all time. So that just shows the distance between the two leagues. But that's not really what we're talking about here. I thought it was a great success, great story, great weekend. Larkin was a star throughout the whole thing. And I don't think it could have turned out any better for Wings fans or hockey fans.
Well, to put my tinfoil hat on for a moment, I will give the NHL credit for one thing in regards to the John Scott story. I think that they manufactured the MVP voting, and I think they did it exactly the way that it should have been done, because they had to have known they were the bad guys in all of this, and they were not going to get any of that. So they named 3 guys as the contenders for the MVP. The 3 guys that they named are 2 of John Scott's teammates who are like the most, nothing against Gaudreau or Hall, but they're basically vanilla kids. And those are the two those are kids that, you know, they're going to give Scott the car if they win the MVP. And then the third is Roberto Luongo, who was a really good choice. And also he's like the most subversive hockey personality there is in the league right now. Like during the game, he's like throwing shade about Stamkos to Toronto.
Yeah.
So you know that if he ends up with the MVP, John Scott's still probably going to get the car. But they know that if they name John Scott as one of the potential finalists and ask for the fan vote, then it looks greasy. It looks like, oh, we've been on this all along, and it kind of takes away from it. So instead, they do it like this, where they hedge it, where if one of those three guys wins, John Scott is still probably going to win. But what they're doing is they're saying, okay, fans, you voted him in against our will. We want you to do that one more time, knowing full well that that's exactly what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so we got to choose John Scott as the MVP, like, and it made it a little bit more special. And I think that that was orchestrated by the NHL, and I don't mind it. What I do mind is I think that they're going to try to recapture this magic next
year
with some shit, and whatever comes out next year.
Rafi Torres, Pacific Division captain.
It's going to be bad. Like, I don't... What do you guys do? Like, do you want them to try to, like, do... Like, try to find a way to get another fourth... Or maybe even four fourth-liners into this game?
No, not at all.
No, like, it's just... It was so good how it was. I mean, it's like... It's like the movie Forrest Gump. You don't remake it because it was so good. You leave it.
Do you think, though, maybe not the league, but do you think there's another fan movement? Like, we did it with John Scott. Let's pick out some other asshole and put him in.
I mean, maybe
it won't be the same. No matter.
I don't think the NHL is going to do another fan vote. I think they're going to go ahead and can that. I still think we'll can that. And
even if they do, like the fan votes, like the fans trying to vote in, like the friendliest nobody they can think of. Even then, it feels like, because the way this story went out, it was. I don't want to give the fans too much credit. For voting John Scott in, because it started out a little bit mean spirited,
right?
And that's what makes it that much more satisfying. It was a little mean spirited by the fans, a little subversive, sure, a little stop feeding us bullshit NHL, or we're going to feed you some bullshit back. And that's what the voting for.
What I thought was really cool about the entire thing is that, and maybe I'm wrong in thinking this, but John Scott, I think, kind of went out there with he looked. Like, you wouldn't, I honestly think that you couldn't tell if you were the first man that he was an all-star or not. I think he kind of held that up. Like, you know, he didn't look like the normal John Scott that you'd see. I mean, he went out in a slap shot competition and he didn't really do that bad. I mean, he did pretty good. And then he went on to the all-star game itself and, you know, he scored two goals and, had that really awesome moment in his first goal where he did that really funny celebration and all the, you know, hockey fans laughed. But in actuality, I thought it was a really cool moment. And it
seemed genuine.
It seemed real. Like, it wasn't fabricated or made up. It was all real.
That's the thing, is if the fans try to do it again, it's going to get now there is a script on exactly how to do this. This was totally unscripted. We had no idea how John Scott was going to come through all of this, and he's the one who brought the magic of this entire story out to life. It wasn't like, because the fans voted him in mean-spirited, and he took it like a champ, and he smiled his way through it, and then it was like, this should actually happen. And throughout the entire thing, it was John Scott's attitude in how he treated the entire thing that made it good. And if we try to do it again where the fans are like, we're gonna vote Rafi Torres in and he's gonna show what a nice, likable guy is, even then it's gonna feel saccharine to me. It's gonna feel like bullshit to me. So I don't think that they should try to redo. I guess I wouldn't mind if they try to put four fourth liners in the All-Star game next year just to see, but I think I would just be okay with kill the fan vote, just name All-Stars, go to the 3-on-3 format, and like really try to do a much better job of showcasing the personalities.
Here's what's going to happen, though. There's still going to be a fan vote, but they're not going to have every player eligible. Like, for the Red Wings, you'll see, like, Datsyuk, Tatar, Nyquist, Zetterberg, Larkin. Like, those five guys. And if, like, someone comes out of nowhere, like an Abdelkader, and has X amount of crazy goals by the time the voting starts, they might add him in. But they're not going to put everybody on there, I bet. So you can still get the fan aspect, but you're only going to have the top guys in the league in there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what they'll do. But yeah, I want to be able to remember this All-Star game as magic in a bottle, as this subversive thing where everybody could have turned out to be a bad guy and really only the right people turned out to be bad guys in this whole situation. And then after that, it just kind of went back to normal All-Star games. Like, if you try to do this shit every year, I think it's going to ruin the memory of this one.
And right. Yeah. I mean, that would kind of just, yeah.
My favorite moment, though, from the whole thing, and there's a gif of it where Patrick Kane gets booed, and you just see John Scott losing his shit and laughing.
That was cool. That was probably the like one of the highlights of the entire like weekend was that. That was amazing.
That was great. When he owned Jeremy Roenick was great. When he played a cane on his ass during that first game, and then almost scored in the breakaway.
Mm-hmm.
God, that would have been so good. Yeah, great, memorable.
Best All-Star game ever.
Yeah.
And it will never be matched, at least for what it was. It won't be matched.
I don't have a segue here.
That's fine.
I was trying. But we're going to jump into some Wings news out of the break.
Sure.
Cronwall placed on IR, long-term IR. Uh-huh. Riley Sheahan probably partied a little too much during the break. No, just kidding. I don't want to say that. He is ill, a little sick right now, didn't practice or skated on his own. The lines from practice, because Riley Sheahan not being there, are absolutely terrifying. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but you have Ablocator, Zetterberg, Larkin on the top line. You have Helm, Datsuk, and Richards on the second line. Hmm. Nyquist, Glendening, and Tatar on the third line. Yurko, Anderson, and Pulkkinen on the fourth line. What the fuck?
Well, here's what I'm going to say about it, is that the lineup is literally no different than what I would expect in terms of top six. I'm not really that surprised there. I think it's just like the same of what we've been getting. The third line, I don't really give a shit about the fourth line. Like, just kind of, like, I don't care about the fourth line nearly as much, just because Blashill's kind of adjusted his way of using the fourth line, so whatever. But, you know, you have Pulkkinen, and who is the other guy? Yurko. So that's a little concerning, because you got two guys who shouldn't be seeing fourth line usage. Pulkkinen possibly not even seeing power play time, because he was an extra during practice, which is kind of infuriating. But the top six is whatever. But the third line, I'm going to go ahead and say that, fuck it, let's do it. Let's see what happens. I mean, you got two scoring wingers, and you've got a gritty sandpaper center who's fast. Let's see what happens. I mean, I know that Glendening can win faceoffs, so I mean, he's. But why not? Give it a shot. Let's see what happens. Let's get weird. But the downside is that if they lose the next two games, then well, fire everything into the sun, because that's terrible. But if it works, then the concern is that, well, shit, now they're just going to think that that's good, and they're just going to roll with that going forward. But I'm very much of the it, with the way the Red Wings are right now, it's very I don't know, fake it till you make it in a way, I guess. I don't know, that might be a bad way of saying things, but I that's just the way I think of the Red Wings right now, honestly.
You put lipstick on the pig so well, Kermit. That Kermit wants to fuck it. Good job, Kyle.
Rated R, not safe for work.
I agree, because I mean, it's essentially there's nothing you can do about it right now. But the top six has six guys who are capable of playing center. Throw out Ablocator, because he hasn't played center in forever. Who cares? Whatever. Right. So you've got five centers. Sure, throw out Larkin, because he hasn't been playing center all season long. Whatever. Okay, so you've got four. You've got three centers on the second damn line. And instead of trying to bump that out, you're going to bump Glendening up to the third line, which is above his play grade. Glendening has done decently on the fourth line in really easy minutes. Glendening should do well enough sheltered between Nyquist and Tatar, but it is not the way that I think the Red Wings should be splitting their lines out. I think Glendening should be down on the fourth line with Anderson and whichever of Pulkkinen or Yurko you feel like. I think I might go with Pulkkinen down there for right now, although I don't know. I think Yurko is more defensively sound, so I may put him there. It kind of depends on where Pulkkinen is health-wise.
Right.
Literally, Helm or Richards, make them the third center, and move Pulkkinen up to play with Datsuk in whichever one of those guys you don't move down. And that way you keep Glendening playing well on the fourth line. And I'm wondering if Blashill just isn't in love with the concept of Glendening shutting down the Lightning, like there's some kind of a magic thing that he's got. I don't like it. I know that they're going to be decent. You know, nobody works harder than Glenn Denning. It's not the end of the world. It's just not ideal. I mean, they're sticking with the same defensive pairings, too, that I don't like either. So, I mean, it is what it is. I'm going to root for them. I think that they've got a good shot of winning. I just think that they could be slightly better with slightly better line usage.
Well, JJ, you mentioned the defense. Let's go there real quick. With Cronwall, if he's out longer than expected, is there any real concern there? Or is it just still, they're going to be fine, they just need to switch up some pairings?
I think, honestly, with how Cronwall has been playing before he had the surgery, he was in a place where the Red Wings could afford to not miss him, for better or for worse, whatever that means. I think if he gets better and comes back and plays well, then he's obviously going to improve the defense. I think the defense is capable of playing just fine. I just think that the whole Green and Smith pairing is a little bit wasteful considering everything that's going on. I think Erickson is still getting too heavy minutes for what he should be doing. I don't get necessarily why they put him on long-term injury reserve since it's just a cap benefit, but I mean, it gives them a little bit more flexibility in terms of if there is going to be a move, which...
They're going to claim Prust.
Yeah, they're going to claim Prust.
Right. Why not?
And that'll be, yeah, that'll be my fault, too.
It will be.
I think it may actually be that they put him on long-term injured reserve to just let everybody on the defense know, listen, you don't have to worry about your spot until the 14th of February. Cronwall's definitely not coming back. He literally cannot come back before then, so... it's your spot to take it and run with it, and whichever one of you is the least good when Cronwall is ready to come back, it's your ass on the line.
Other than Erickson.
Yeah, other than Erickson.
I don't know. I think that it just gives them flexibility in court in case they want to bring somebody up. Personally, before today, I already thought he was on LTIR, but I, you know, that's just me being, you know, I'm a bad fan. You can all go ahead and just call me a bad fan. That's fine. But I think that it is what it is. They're probably just using it for the cap relief, and as they should. I mean, if he's not going to be back anytime soon, then yeah, why not? I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do to make ends meet nowadays in the NHL. So, you know, now they can call someone else up if they want to bench Erickson because he's god awful and bring up Ouellette because he deserves it, or Jensen, not that he deserves it, but he deserves a look because of how long he's been playing in the AHL. I mean, yeah, sure, whatever. But this is going against what we have in the lineup, the outline tonight. But do you guys think that this might be an injury for Cronwall that might, you know, end it all for him? I mean, the guy isn't good anymore. Like,
you mean like he never plays again, or it's just,
no?
This is the,
like he
this
might
is the beginning of the end.
It could be the beginning of the end, or he just goes Calvin Johnson is like, you know what, fuck it, I got my money, I'm gonna get some more money, I'm just gonna call it quits.
No, I don't think that happens.
I had that thought today, and I was like, man, that would be kind of a blessing in disguise, I think. But yeah, I don't know.
Cap recapture on him though.
Well, yeah, he would front it.
But it's just like, you know, you think that was just me thinking earlier today. It's like, man, I don't know if he can return. Like, he was already pretty bad to begin with, like this year, you know, given the usage was unfair. His partners were like, meh. But at the same time, I was just like, man, I don't know how I feel about Cronwall before he was injured. Now, after he's injured, it could be worse.
Well, he's kind of the great unknown right now. Like, we don't know if the knee is one of the reasons. You know, you mentioned usage and his partner, but maybe the knee had a bigger impact on how poorly he was playing. And
right.
The knee's healthy. He's, you know, we're not expecting 2009 Cronwall back, but he will be better than what we saw the first half of the year. Or he's just going to continue to go on that downward slope towards just being a third pair defenseman eventually, or second pair defenseman. You know, you just don't know, but we do know he'll be our trade deadline acquisition.
Yeah.
He would be walking away from $10.75 million in salary for the next 3 years if he retired.
I don't think he retires.
All right, well, you and your stupid numbers game, so whatever.
I'm looking up recapture right now.
Well, okay, so like the beginning of the end then. Like if we're thinking, I mean, this could potentially, I mean, what was it? It was a knee problem, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, what is one of the main things a good skating defenseman needs? Good legs. And I mean,
well, I just think maybe, you know, the beginning of the end, meaning once this contract's up, then he's done.
Yeah.
And you can't really expect Nick Cronwall to be the Nick Cronwall of old anymore. You know, he's not even going to be that fake number one defenseman. I'm using air quotes right now. He's just legitimately not a guy that you needed a number one. Now you need a number two as well.
I honestly think the Red Wings are in that, like, they need a number one because I think they have a guy, the Kaiser, who could be a number two. But
sure.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know, man. I have a really, really shitty feeling about this entire situation. And, you know, thankfully, Cronwall isn't, like, in terms of, like, the capper, like, where we're at right now. He doesn't get paid a lot of money. He really doesn't. It's like the it's like the Franzen thing. Franzen doesn't get paid that much money for what he is. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like...
Yeah, that's the thing. 4.75 is not top-pairing money.
No, not even close. So I think the Red Wings have a really good situation there, but Cronwall isn't a top-pairing guy anymore, so...
Yeah, the recapture pool for Cronwall, if he retires this summer, would be $1.16 million for three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
If he would go next summer, it would be $2.125 million for the two seasons. And if he retires in the summer of 2018, that would be a $3 million cap penalty.
Right.
And like I said, he's probably long-term injured, reserve retire rather than full-out walk away from the game. But yeah, there is still a concern because he had his knee scoped, and it's essentially what happened with Brian Rafalski is
exactly.
His knee started going, he had it scoped, and then he's like, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. And he walked away from... He still had $6 million left on that contract.
Yeah,
one year,
$6 million.
Yeah. So I don't know if Cronwall does that. I think I would rather that Erickson walk away from his contract, but
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Right. Although he does have that hip issue. It's just going to be a case where we have to come to the realization that the Cronwall playing as a number one defenseman out of necessity because we didn't have another one. He was always in Ersatz's option on that anyway. He was never a true number one. He could hack it at times. That's completely over with, and there is zero point in pretending that he's going to be able to do it otherwise. If he can go back to being a real solid, kind of soft use number four guy, then I think he'll still be able to hack that. If he has to go down to third pairing, that's... 4.75 is maybe a little steep for a third pairing guy, but it kind of depends on how many points he can put up. He's got to get back to performing on the power play, and that's not something that you ordinarily shelter a guy in the third pairing for. But I don't know, brave new world. You get young kids like DeKaiser eating up big minutes, and hell, let Marchenko eat up big minutes, and then get your specialists time elsewhere.
You know, and the big thing you keep mentioning is we need to realize, well, I think it's we already realize it. It's just we got to hope the team realizes it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are in the Red Wings.
Sorry for that. We kind of went off the rails there.
No, off the rails is good. Speaking of rail, I got nothing here. Fucking standings are really fucking tight. Right now, the Wings, as of recording this, are still in third since the Bruins lost in overtime to Mike Babcock and his Maple Leafs. They have a game in hand in the Bruins, tied in points with the Lightning, who are currently in the second spot, and Florida, who beat the Capitals, are still in first. I don't know, good amount of points ahead. Not too far that the Wings could catch them in theory, but... Just what do we think of the standings? How tight it is? It's going to be like this all year long. I mean, it's make or break. I mean, kind of just looking ahead. You know, we usually look ahead to the week at the end, but you got back-to-back with Tampa and Florida on the road. Then you've got the Islanders at home. They beat them recently, but Islanders aren't a shitty, shitty team. And then you got Florida again next Monday. I mean, you have one bad week, and you're out of the playoffs. You have one good week, you could be first in the division. Or close to it. It's just how crazy is this going to be, the whole stretch run here?
The Red Wings are not going to be in a comfortable position for the rest of the season. That's my opinion there. I mean, and if you reflect, like, you look towards, like, starting tomorrow, you know, recording the night before the game against Tampa. The next two games, because what is it? It's Tampa, then Florida, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I mean, if you go out and you lay an egg in two of those games, then, yeah, you're looking kind of bad. So you need to come out hot, and everything tells me that the Red Wings coming back, from an extended rest is going to be probably kind of a gong show. And I don't know. I'm nervous. Like, I really am nervous. So I really think that Blash will probably just come out and say, Mrazek, you're going to get this back-to-back because, yeah, we're not fucking around anymore.
Interesting thing is that apparently Blashill told Bill Roos today or yesterday that Mrazek is going to start Wednesday, and then after that he's done telling the Diggers who the starter is beforehand.
Like, so at all?
Yeah, it's going to be mystery starter going on. So, yeah, we have no idea who is planning on starting on Thursday. We won't know. We're not sure when we're going to know either. So, yeah,
I wonder if it'll be one of those things where he'll tell the players and then the players will spill the beans in the dressing room, like after the morning skate or something.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, plus the Diggers are usually pretty good at saying which guy is occupying the starter's ice. Net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
first off the ice. Now it'll be a little bit different for Thursday because the morning skate will likely be optional. But
or they just won't have one. Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as the standings in the race goes, yeah, I think that we are not going to get comfortable. All of the various sites that track playoff probabilities have the Red Wings at about 75-ish%. So that's, I like our chances.
Right.
Obviously, we can't afford to have a collapse like we did last year, but I think that we are a little bit more insulated from that. I think that the horseshit that went on like post-break last year was just a combination of factors that are largely gone now. Obviously, age and fatigue is the one factor that remains, but I honestly think that by the time last year was wrapping up, people were the locker room was a little stale, and I don't think it's stale anymore. For a couple of, not only at the head coaching position, but also I think that I'm really going to put a lot on Dylan Larkin's shoulders as far as keeping this team energized in the the second half.
He's got a lot on him, and rightfully so. And that's what, like, going back to what I said, is that I kind of expect him to come back from this All-Star weekend and just be revitalized and just, yeah, be a driving force for this team. As a matter of fact, I call me crazy, but I want to see him as the first center. I want to see him centering Henrik Zetterberg and Justin Ablikator, who else. I want to see that. Like, I think that should happen. I think it's time to just start moving this kid into what his position is going to be with his team going forward. And that is a first line center with a patch on his shoulder. And I think that I'm putting a lot on a 19-year-old, but you know, he's dealt with it, and I think that it could be time. But it goes either way. The Red Wings could really struggle for the rest of it and, you know, maybe just slip into the playoffs, or they could go on a hot streak. I mean, you've seen teams like Florida who just blast out and just go and take over the first, you know, in the division. The Red Wings could very well do that with the goaltender that they have. It's just, they got to make the adjustments. They really need to make the adjustments. And one of the first adjustments they need to do is, A, the defense, that needs to be mixed up. And then, B, they need to fix the power play, because that is a huge thing. Because if you look at the Red Wings so far this season, if you think of a Red Wings team who could possibly have like a 20% or a little bit less, you know, power play squad efficiency of 20% or a little bit less, what the differential of the team would be right now. And I think that might make a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that essentially they're going to have to just keep relying on what got them here in the first place. Essentially, as a team, they've been unable to fire on all cylinders all at once. They've gotten to where they are now through a bunch of different factors of like one thing will pick up and another thing will drop off. But the two constants for the Red Wings this year has been the energy level of Dylan Larkin, even though he hasn't, he's gone through a couple of points droughts, his energy level has never dropped off, and the play of Peter Mrazek. If those two keep up, I think we'll be fine. If we get everything firing on all cylinders, then I think we're going to be amazing. But if those things drop off, then yeah, I think that that we're going to be in real trouble.
You know, if they decide to go on a hot streak here, this is the month to do it because, I mean, I mentioned Tampa, Florida, and then Florida again. You also got the Senators, the Bruins coming up, Islanders twice, Penguins, Senators again. I mean, these are teams you're going to be fighting with potentially in both the division and in potential wild card scenarios. So Rangers as well. So now's the right time to go on a run. Speaking of runs.
God damn it, Jeff. Son of a bitch.
Xavier Ouellette had a nice run at the AHL All-Star Game, and I think Michelle's going to talk about it in the prospects report.
The Griffins went 0-3 last week, and with three more losses, that makes it five in a row. They lost 4-0 and 4-2 in a set of games versus the Toronto Marlies, and then 7-3 to the Milwaukee Admirals. They've now been outscored 5-15 in their last three games, and 5-17 in their last four. And they also recorded back-to-back shutout losses for just the fourth time in franchise history. After three frustrating losses, Xavier Ouellette and Jeff Hogan headed out to Syracuse to represent the Griffins and the Central Division in the AHL All-Star Challenge. Xavier Ouellette was also named to the All-Star team last year, but he was up playing with Detroit, so he wasn't able to participate. He's only the fourth Griffins player to be named an AHL All-Star in back-to-back years. Nicholas Cronwall in 04-05, Gustav Nyquist in 2012-13, and then Michel Picard in 97-98 when the Griffins were still with the IHL. Ouellette was chosen to participate in the hardest shot competition, registering 93.8 miles an hour, which was the slowest shot of the eight shooters. The hardest was Ryan Graves of the Hartford Wolfpack, who registered 103.4. The average of the eight shooters was 98.44. I'm not quite sure why Ouellette was chosen to participate in that event, since it's not something that he's known for. Either way, Ouellette and Hogan helped the Central Division win the All-Star game. Ouellette had two goals and two assists, and Jeff Hogan had two goals and an assist on his 38th birthday. The way they did it is the round-robin games were 9 minutes long and split into halves of 4-on-4 and 3-on-3. The Central Division defeated the Atlantic Division 4-0 in the championship game, which was a 6-minute contest played 3-on-3. We're already over halfway through the season with the Griffins, and they sit at 50 points in a record of 24-17-1-1, and they hold on to the 4th spot in the Central Division and 6th in the Western Conference. After starting the year with a 2-8-0-1 mark, the Griffins have now rattled off a franchise record 15 straight wins between November 18th and December 26th, but have now gone 1-5-1-0 in their last 7 games. I've been hammering on the Griffins' special teams all season long, but they continue to be abysmal. The Griffins' power play is 26th in the league at 13.7%, and special teams have really been either contributing greatly to them losing games or simply being masked by stretches of immense 5-on-5 goal scoring. But both their power play and penalty kill have not been good, and it's cost them games. If you look at just the last few games that they've played, they, for the most part, didn't lose by a ton. We're talking 1- and 2-goal games, where if your power play can get a goal, maybe two, that can be the difference between winning and losing. The Griffins' penalty kill was perfect in those three losses. They were 8 times shorthanded and killed them all off. However, their power play continued to lay a goose egg, going 0-9. Just to give some context on how key the special teams are to the Griffins winning and losing, they have 24 wins on the season. In those wins, their power play has been 18.56%. In the 19 losses they have this season, their power play is an abysmal 8.14%. In their 24 wins, their penalty kill is 91.3%, and in their 19 losses, it drops to 76.81%. That's a very large discrepancy. When their special teams are working, they're winning. When they're not, they're losing. Coach Nelson did an interview with the Edmonton Journal where he talked about Anthony Mantha, and while it's nothing new, he summed up very nicely what I've been saying about Mantha throughout this season. He said the biggest thing with him is we want his compete level to be consistent every night, where he's tough to play against, down low where he protects the puck well, doing the right things defensively, being on the right side of the puck, and also stripping guys of the puck with the long reach. He's been getting better and better at it, and I think everybody in the organization is happy with his progress, but they want to see more. And that's kind of exactly where I'm at with Mantha. He's been getting better and better. He's still playing well, but there's still more. The Griffins have a pair of upcoming games this week, Friday and Saturday night against the Rockford IceHogs. Saturday night is Teemu Pulkkinen bobblehead night, and that bobblehead is absolutely amazing. It's the pose where he's on his knees on the ice after he scored his hat trick. If you have the opportunity to go, go get one. Down in Toledo, the Walleye did the opposite of what the Griffins did and picked up three wins, a 4-0 win over the Brampton Beast, a 2-1 win over the Fort Wayne Comets, and a 3-2 win over the Quad City Mallards. Two of those three wins, including the shutout, belong to Jake Patterson, who was named the ECHL's Goaltender of the Week. He got his first pro shutout with 28 saves Friday night against the Beast in the 4-0 win, then stopped 29 of 31 shots against Quad City on Sunday, and the Walleye won 3-2 in overtime. He went 2-0-0 in the week, had a .99 goals against average, and a .966 save percentage. Coach Lalonde said, "Jake was outstanding this past week, and he was sharp and in control in both his starts. He was our best player and the difference in our win versus Quad City." For most of the season, Patterson has been splitting starts with Jeff Lurg, and that's continued after Patty got sent back down from Grand Rapids. He's made three starts and picked up the two wins, including a shutout. Picking up those 6 points helped the Toledo Walleye remain atop the Northern Division, with 58 points and a record of 27-11-1-3. They also hold the third spot in the Eastern Conference. In other prospects news, defenseman Ville Saarijärvi rattled off 3 goals and an assist in 2 games last week for the Flint Firebirds, and he now has a 3-game point streak going and 6 points in his last 5. He's 16th among OHL defensemen in points with 27, despite missing 8 games while he was away winning gold at the World Juniors. He's also now 3rd on the Flint Firebirds in points, but the team continues their slide. They're the 3rd-worst team in the league, and they've lost their last 15 games. You have to go all the way back to December 18th for their last win, and 13 of those 15 losses came in regulation, so they're even having trouble picking up a single point. The entire situation in Flint, both with management and coaching, and their losing, makes me really bummed out that Ville's stuck there. I hate seeing him play on a team that's struggling so bad, even though it's for selfish reasons. If the team isn't able to turn itself around next season and get rid of some of this drama and overhanging issues, I would like to see Ville go and play somewhere else, just because I don't think that that's a good environment for him to be learning and developing in, and I don't think it's very much fun either. It's got to be miserable. Over in the QMJHL, Adam Marsh suffered a concussion on January 10th, and he's now missed 7 games and counting. In 3 games last week, Evgeny Svechnikov had a goal and 3 assists, and he now has 22 goals and 54 points in 35 games. In the Western Hockey League, Joe Hicketts notched 2 more assists in 2 wins for the Victoria Royals and was named second star in one of the games. The Royals continue to win since the return of their stud defenseman. Dom Turgeon had a slower week, notching just 1 goal in 2 games and coming out a -1 in 2 losses. In the BCHL, Chase Perry picked up 2 wins in 2 games that he played last week, a 4-3 win and a 5-2 win, allowing 5 goals in 2 games and making a total of 40 saves. In college hockey, James DeHaas had a 2-point game for the Clarkson Golden Knights in a 2-1 overtime win, and in 2 games also picked up 6 shots, was an even ranking, and had 4 penalty minutes. Mike McKee didn't play in either of the 2 games for Western last week, and for a guy that's coming up on a signing deadline this summer, it's not looking good. David Pope was also sidelined with a concussion back on January 22nd and hasn't played since. He's missed 4 games so far. Over in Europe, after seeing increased responsibility and greater ice time for a stretch of games, Christopher N looks like he's been bumped back down to the 4th line, including a couple games where he didn't see the ice at all. He's a 19-year-old playing in the Swedish Hockey League, so he has more of a challenge than many players. But on the season, in 39 games, he has 2 goals and 5 assists. Axel Holmstrom picked up another goal in 3 games last week. He now has 6 goals and 21 points on the season in 36 games, and he's tied for 1st among junior players in the SHL in both points at 20 and goals with 6. In the KHL, Alexander Kadikin had greatly increased ice time, responsibilities, and production as he centered the top line with Ilya Kovalchuk for a spell. In the last few weeks, his ice time has dropped back down, and he's going back down to 6, 8, 10 minutes a game, and he hasn't registered a point in 6. And that's what's going on in the world of Red Wings prospects.
Thank you, Michelle, for that awesome prospects report. Let's do some reader questions. JJ, it's your turn.
All right. Well, who's ready to talk about some trade speculation?
Can't wait.
Everybody, I hope.
Bring it on.
So we're going to start right off the bat with T and Kicker Death wants to know, is Riley Shahan trade bait?
I would trade him, yes.
And Larkin both have a center experience.
Well, here's what I would say to that. How much trade value does he actually have?
Well, he's part of something.
Right. I get it. He's part of something. And, you know, the kid has size. He's not
Austin
a bad player.
Canadian kid, yeah.
Yes, he's not bad by any means at all. I just kind of have like that. He might be a part of a trade that I don't want to make. But if he is like a centerpiece in a trade that brings Dustin Byfuglien to town, sure. Like if he is the highest, if he is the highest tier, okay, let's just say if he is the highest tier asset in a trade that brings Dustin Byfuglien here, do we make that trade?
Well, I'm not saying it's for Dustin Byfuglien, but if it's something like Shea and Mantha and a first.
Okay, yeah, no, but I'm speaking in terms of just if he is the highest tier of asset that brings Dustin Byfuglien here, do you say yes?
Now, what is your definition of tier, though? Like, he's technically higher than Mantha because he's in the NHL and Mantha's not, but I look at Mantha's ceiling as higher than Shayen's.
Okay, well, yeah, Mantha has a higher ceiling, so I'm speaking in terms of ceiling then, I guess you should say.
Okay.
So if you're talking about a guy like Shayen, a second-round pick, and then a guy like Athanasiou or whoever, like, that would be comparable for Dustin Byfuglien and a third-round pick, do you make that trade? Because I do.
Sure. I don't know why Winnipeg would, but I would.
Well, Winnipeg is a really bad organization.
Yeah.
Shevel Dayoff is not good.
I mean, and plus, we have his replacement, Luke Lindenning, third-line center, so...
Exactly. Which sucks because we would then trade away Athanasiou, who is Cheyenne's replacement. But
yeah, I think the bottom line is that Cheyenne is a combination of decently valuable enough and also decently replaceable enough that, yeah, you look at trading him if the price is right, but you don't necessarily consider it a we have to get rid of him, nor is it a we have to be wowed. It's just business as it is.
Fun fact, Riley Cheyenne is roommates with Luke Lindenning and Dylan Larkin.
So he is like his trade value is.
Well, then he is.
He works hard and he's skilled. If he takes both their traits,
yeah. Team Kicker Death follows it up immediately with the outside the box thinking: what if instead of looking to move Howard, we look to move Mrazek?
No.
There's no more discussion here.
You don't move him.
Well, the argument here is that like maybe you go for a Korpisalo or one of the other goalie prospects. And that Mrazek should return significantly higher value to make the team in front of what is probably, I'm assuming it's going to be Jimmy Howard and a backup that's going to be better than Jimmy Howard.
So, I mean, okay, you trade for a guy like Korpisalo who is on the Blue Jackets, who is a good prospect, but, like, who else comes in that package that really makes it worthwhile? I mean, good
Seth
goalies.
Jones.
That's not going to happen. But I mean, good goalies.
Right. I don't know. Good goalies. What Mrazek will get you. So like, I'm having a lot of trouble saying yes to that.
With the numbers that Mrazek has, like so far in his career, yes, it's a small sample size. But I mean, that is at such a premium that I would not trade Mrazek unless you are turning a bona fide all-star, team-changing player. Like that is that. Like unless you are trading for a guy who is like. I don't know. And this is just me, like an Aaron Ekblad. Not Aaron Ekblad only, but like a guy who is at that tier. Like, that's just me. And I wouldn't even trade Mrazek to get like a top five prospect in the draft because, I don't know, you like even like a Jacob, I think it's Chychrun or whatever, but I just don't do it just because I think that we are looking at Mrazek, who could possibly be a guy that you build your organization around. That is your guy. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm being silly with this because, you know, you look at the Montreal Canadiens who lean on Carey Price and they are just falling apart at the seams. But I don't do it. Not a chance. No thanks. Bye.
Well, I guess the thought of a trade is so you're not like Montreal Canadiens where you're depending so much on the goaltender.
No. You want to build around him. You want to build a good team, not just a bunch of, you know,
but no, it needs to be Larkin and Mrazek for the next 15 years.
Those are the two untouchable.
10 years.
Yeah, I'd have to be absolutely ethered by a trade offer to dump Mrazek.
Right.
You've got an elite goaltender who is still cross controlled. He is not going to get starter money on his next contract, even though he's the starter. So it's going to be a real decent deal, in my opinion.
Right.
And that's just something that basically every team should want and every team should pay out their freaking nose for.
Right. So if you were and just branching off of that, the only trade that I would like think like to my mind that I would make is with St. Louis. So if you take Mrazek and maybe just like a spare part, and you trade for like a Jake Allen or whatever, and then you get like a Robbie Fabry and then a Colton Parrico, like I might entertain that option. I might do that. That might be something I look into, but that's it. That is literally, it would have to be Mrazek plus a spare part for two really good players who can play at the NHL in at a very good level, and that's it. Like, and then like another spare part. There's no way I trade Mrazek unless it's something that knocks my my socks off and rubs my back before bed.
All right, Connor 19. Given a little bit of line shuffling with the All-Star Game format, who would you most like to see in a wing sweater next to Larkin, regardless of likely training scenarios or whatnot?
John Scott.
So, just total dream team.
Evgeny Svechnikov, and I would say, okay, so Datsyuk as center, Larkin as whatever wing, and Svechnikov as whatever other wing.
See, I was reading that like literally anybody in the league.
You can pick.
Okay, then Larkin, Gaudreau, and Vladimir Tarasenko.
I loved when it was Larkin, Bergeron, and Subban.
Oh, yeah, that was excellent. That was I loved that. Nice. That was beautiful.
That's the thing. It's not so much about who's on a line with him as so much as who's behind him. I would love to have Carlson or Subban on the road
that's
wings.
That's what she said.
Giggity.
Giggity.
Okay. Nick Van Buren has a multi-tiered question. Underutilization and misusage of players, thoughts on what will be the tipping point for things to change? Is it going to take a whole new season? Essentially the things we've been complaining about. Helmut Applicator playing in the top six, Jericho and Polkinen playing in the fourth line, the weird D pairings. Like, what's it going to take for Blashill to actually change that usage?
It's going to take Richards and Helm not being here.
I think it takes...
In, like, next year?
I think it takes missing the playoffs. I think if you miss the playoffs this year, then I think maybe things start changing, because when you think about the organization, they're so hung up on that playoff streak. If they miss the playoffs, then things are going to change. Not so much with coaching, but with player personnel and the way that things are used. Until then, you're stuck.
Somebody's got to block shots. Somebody's got to kill penalties.
It's not fantasy hockey, folks.
So, let's see. Holmes from 96 wants us to take a minute to appreciate John Scott. We did, but here's another seconds of silence for how amazing that story was.
Johnny Hockey.
All right. Acadiani 6. Do you guys believe the NHL is going the right way by suspending guys for one game for missing the All-Star game? Should it be a multi-game suspension? No suspension? Or is there another consequence you'd prefer to dole out for guys skipping out on the All-Star game?
I think that if it is...
Taves and Ovechkin are both sitting.
Yeah, I
they
think
got,
that...
Oh, so they got suspended or whatever?
One game, yeah.
Oh.
I think that it, if it is a... if it's a situation where you had the flu, then yeah, you should probably sit for a game. Like, or I don't know, that even seems a little weird, but I don't know, because no, just give them, like, fine them for some money or something. That's it.
I mean, they suspended Lidstrom, so then they should suspend everybody else too.
Yeah, well,
and Datsu.
Yeah.
Multi-game suspensions for skipping the All-Star game is horse shit, and if the league does that, then it's going to be stupid, because there's a lot of dumbass headshots out there that still only get one game suspensions. And if you're going to say Jonathan Taves has to sit out more than one game because he doesn't feel well and had to miss the All-Star game, then I mean, kiss my ass, honestly. Yeah. But I don't know, because Bettman reiterated that essentially, because Lidstrom and Datsyuk got suspended that year, and Sidney Crosby didn't, because Sidney Crosby got a personal call by Bettman that says, hey, I know you're not playing, but can you still show up and glad hand with everybody? And he did, and he didn't get suspended. And Bettman, to his infernal credit, has stayed consistent with that. Had Taves and Ovechkin decided to go to Nashville, say, I can't play, but I'll gladly shake hands with all the sponsors and sign autographs and do whatever, Bettman said they would not have been suspended. So players understand what they're losing out on with skipping the All-Star game. I don't think anything needs to be changed. Just keep it with a one-game suspension if you want to skip out. Then, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Not even necessarily a one-game suspension, but definitely you have to sit out of the next game. I don't care if they lose their money for not playing the next game.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, Let's see. That's not a serious question, but I do kind of want to a lot of people have been talking lately about trading Cleary for John Scott. It gets Cleary closer to his home, and it gets John Scott closer to his wife's family's home in Grand Rapids, obviously, not to call him up to Detroit. Is that a yes or a super yes?
Super yes?
Super yes, yeah.
Anything that gets Dan Cleary out of the organization.
Yeah, anybody that gets Dan Cleary as far away from Detroit is totally cool with me.
Yep. OCHSK, OX 11. How the hell did Mrazek not become one of the players of the month?
Well, it's John Scott.
Yeah, you just, I don't know.
They threw him a bone.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're mad over that, but. You know,
and look at the bright side. It's one less thing his agent can say. Hey, he was the top star of the month or whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Contract Jeff with the hammer right there.
Yeah, there you go. Master Moj, AA Helm or Larkin, who wins? Obviously, he didn't say what kind of contest. So
this is something that I've been wanting to talk about like openly here for a second. But it's like, if I think that it's like end to end, I think Helm wins. But the way that Larkin skates on edge and the way that he moves laterally, I think that Larkin can't be beat. I mean, the way that he turns corners, the way that his stride hits, I don't know if there's any other player that can really match up to that. Helm is really good. He's like a NASCAR, you know, he just goes really fast, you know, end to end. But, you know, when you go around the corners, you know, Larkin kind of showed that even when he tripped up in the All-Star game, he just has a really efficient stride in the way that his crossovers are. Like, I just think that that's what makes him so goddamn fast, is that he will turn the corner and he will jump up on his turbo pony, as I like to say, and he will just go. So I think that's what Larkin kind of does. He just moves a ladder.
Helm is Helm is a primer colored NASCAR car because he's got no finish.
yeah, he's like a, I don't know, like, let's say that if Larkin was a NASCAR car, he would be an Oreo, and then if Helm was, what's the off brand that we talked about last week?
Hydrox, yeah.
Hydrox, yeah. Yep. There you go.
I'm taking Larkin. I'm a man of the people, and I put that poll in Quick Hits, and the people voted 43% for Dylan Larkin.
Yep.
Helm was second. FNICU was third, so they would finish in that order.
This is a democracy, folks.
All right.
So, Wimocracy.
Wimocracy, yeah.
That's fine, too.
Let's see. Is there a compelling reason that Helm should not or cannot be re-signed, according to Neelock187?
Yes, we can spend the money elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And here's the thing, is that Helm is the kind of guy that the Red Wings would give a contract to that everybody wouldn't like. Like, I honestly think that they would give him a raise and then give him term. So, if he wanted to come back for, like, 1 year at, like, maybe $250K more, maybe. But, nah. In his role that he's at right now, abso-fucking-lutely not.
Like, he's that money. We talked about it last week, too. Is essentially, Darren Helm's fair market value is going to be $3 to $3.5 million, but that's not the value to the Wings for the position he plays.
Right.
The Wings need to save that money elsewhere. Nothing against Helm. Love the guy. Sorry, but goodbye unless you're willing to sign for $2.5 million.
The Wings are very much transitioning into where they need to get value out of their entry-level contracts, I think. You know, they need to get value out of the guys like Mantha or maybe a Svechnikov, even though he's not, it's very unlikely that he'll start with the Wings. They really need to get value out of those guys to free up cap space in other parts because, you know, they've got some ugly contracts coming up.
All right. Quite a few questions about Bufflin being a wing and what we think about that. We've got a whole article and a whole lot of discussion on the site about it. So
go read it.
Yeah, go read it. I personally don't like his attitude. He's 30 years old and like he bullied a kid 7 years his junior like a really stupid way, and I know he's really good at hockey and it's possible that they can get away with that, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, the way I look at Bufflin is that if you bring him onto the team right now, he is one of the top goal scorers, and that could potentially say there's an issue with this team, or you know, that could just, you could either look at it as a way as that, you know, he, it would be a great acquisition. The only way I bring Bufflin into Detroit is if it is, it really has to be, it would have to be a deal like what we made for Eric Cole, honestly. I mean, that's just,
yeah, and they're not going to take that.
No.
So
no, because they will
deal,
get, they will
could
get
either
more,
be good or bad.
They will get more from other teams. They will get a first round pick from a team like Washington, or I don't know. I don't know if they have a first round pick. Whatever. Shut up.
That's our half-calf hot take.
Yep, there you go. Read the article, folks.
Swapping positions. Do you expect Dylan Larkin to move back to center anytime soon? By Lou Willie.
Like I said before, I would love to see Dylan Larkin center Zetterberg and whoever else. And on
so,
I think
that's going to happen next year. I don't expect it to happen this season.
I don't think it'll happen this year, but I would. If we woke up one morning and saw the line rushes and saw that Larkin was centering the top line with Advocator, Zetterberg, or Zetterberg and Nyquist, I would probably leap out of my seat and do a handstand and maybe take my shirt off. I don't know.
Well,
but
next year, you can put Datsuk and Zetterberg back together with Advocator and then Larkin, Tatar, and Mantha. Something
there
like
go.
That.
You heard it here,
that's
folks.
That's a good one.
Remember that.
The Birdman wants to know, by this time next year, which Wim blogger is most likely to be known as the Betrayer and why?
Oh, God, I don't like this.
Wait, what? I don't know. Aren't I already the Betrayer because I'm a Bruins fan?
Well, yeah, but we're talking about next year.
Yeah, by next year.
Probably Graham. He flip-flops on his teams all the time. He's got like 7 NFL teams.
I'm going to say Prashant.
Yeah, I said Prashant too.
You guys can all expect Prashant to be onto something bigger in the next 365 days. That is for sure.
That's exactly why. I think he's got a decent chance of actually getting offered a job by a team.
Yeah.
And like, hopefully Betrayer is a really strong word for that, because I would wish him well. But
you should lock him up to a long-term deal.
I'm hoping that it's the Red Wings. That would be, or somewhere west. It's not going to be me because I'm stupid. So not stupid.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I couldn't get hired by another team because I would actively try to sabotage any team.
You could probably.
You should pick up Brandon Prest off waivers. That's
no, a team would hire you to run their Twitter feed, JJ.
Yeah, I'll bet. That would go over super well.
Yeah, you just JJ like randomly fuck off to some fan.
Be like Hurricanes from Kansas.
That would work, I think. Piggybacking off of this, if you all gave each other nicknames, what would they be?
God,
isn't JJ already a nickname?
It is. I got called the Avocado File from Kansas, but T and Kicker Death spelled avocado wrong, so that doesn't count.
Nope.
Good job on that, dumbass.
I would say
Graham can be Mr. Clean.
We could call him Jeff Blashill.
Yeah, that's good. I don't know. I guess
it
I would say
be something Anaheim related.
Yep. You could call me.
You're not supposed to give yourself a nickname.
Okay, don't call me anything. Jeff, I would call Jeff Brad Marchand.
Why? That's not a nickname. That's just someone else's name.
It's still a nickname for you, though. It's a nickname for you. I don't like this question. This is bad. You guys go ahead with this.
I already did. Mr. Clean for Graham.
Okay.
I've got Michelle, I would call Apollo, because in the entire Greek pantheon, Apollo was the one that was on top of the Griffins.
Oh, nice.
Oh, geez.
Well done.
Kyle is Kyle's thrift store.
What?
Explain yourself. You're Kyle McLemore.
Okay. All right. I'm done. Goodbye.
Graham is Saint Winged Wheel. He got given that nickname angrily by a baseball blogger like 4 years ago, and I've always liked it. Because Graham apparently had the temerity to once question Ken Holland.
Who dare
and
you?
Jeff, you are Leia's favorite thing in the galaxy. That's your nickname. Leia's favorite. Because you're the Hancock.
All right, we're just going to go with that. Because JJ has way better answers than we definitely do.
I actually thought about this one. I wrote these answers down.
Yeah, but you did.
I should read the questions next time.
I was really proud of Hancock there.
Read the questions, watch the game.
Oh, okay, we've got our actual questions. Any crazier bold predictions for the back third of the season?
Brendan Smith, top pair defenseman by the start of the playoffs.
I'd be okay with that. Mine is Larkin, first line center.
Mrazek, Vezina nominee.
McDavid finishes ahead of Eichel for the Calder. Not necessarily wins the Calder, but finishes ahead of him in the standings.
Probably, because of who votes for it.
Yeah, plus he had a crazy awesome goal tonight.
Yeah, he did. It was
Didn't
ridiculous.
See it. Thanks, NHL it, TV.
It was stupid. It was like, it was better than what when he scored on the Red Wings on Mrazek. It was dumb.
Yeah.
But he will not save that team, so whatever, screw him.
Bill H. was looking at January's Octoplot, which was posted by Mike Morris Santa Rosa. Wants to know, do you think coaching is the problem here, considering the team's very poor offensive statistics?
Oh, wow, that is
a good goal. Players are structured on ice and not to succeed in an offensive capacity, or do you think the players still aren't buying into Blashill's system?
I didn't read that post yet, unfortunately. I will soon. But I don't know if it's really, like, you could blame the fact that it is a vastly different system. Not even vastly, but if you think about it, the Red Wings weren't really a super high-scoring team under Babcock last season. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they need a little bit of a change there, and maybe coaching needs to make that adjustment. But I'm not a coach. I'm not a hockey supermind, so I can't tell you how they make that change.
I think it is a matter of Coach Blashill specifically choosing to play a low event style makes a lot of their fancies a little bit more difficult to get into, and it makes them look worse by comparison.
Yeah.
And I think it's really tough to come out of, and I think it is a combination of there's a lot of guys who, and Blashill has said this, I mean, we've got guys that basically aren't performing where they ought to be. I'm not so sure that it's a lot of like not buying into the system. I think some of it is just pure dumb luck.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think that they're due for kind of a bunch of bounces that's going to make them look amazing, and then we're just not going to question it anymore. That's what I'm just going to cross my fingers for that.
I'd be okay with that.
They should just go get McDavid because that goal was nasty.
You saw it. You finally saw it.
I just looked it up on the Twitter.
That's some good shit.
And then very last question from ShoelessJoe91. Predict who shows the most improvement from now until season's end. Quincy, Cheyenne, Nyquist, or who cares?
Brendan Smith.
That wasn't an option.
Who cares?
Probably Quincy, just because he's going to get better the more he plays.
I'm going to go ahead and say Quincy because I want him to be traded.
Well, and he'll be on another team, so he'll get better for them. So,
yeah.
Obviously, yeah, he'll play for another team. He'll score 4 goals. Everybody, you yell at us.
I can't wait till he scores the game-winning goal in the Stadium Series against the Red Wings.
Oh,
God damn it, JJ!
Although,
mark it down.
Jill's not going to the game, guys. It means they're going to win.
I would. Right. You know what, JJ? I'll high five you if that happens.
That's okay, good. Because I'm going to get my ass kicked by everybody else. You can protect me.
It's because you're a bad fan.
Yeah, you are.
It's true.
Everybody is a bad fan besides Jeff.
No, I just meant not JJ. I meant you. You're going to high five him because you're a bad fan.
Well. You're a worse. You're okay.
You're a duck with a machete.
No. We're not. Can we not?
No, we can't recreate the magic. There's no point in trying.
We could try. We could sit here for another 15 minutes and try, but no.
I'm out of questions.
Yeah, that's
the last question. I didn't know that. Why didn't you tell me?
I said it was the last question.
Say that's the last question.
I'm sorry. I was watching the McDavid goal again.
Damn it. You're a bad fan.
I'm the best fan. Speaking of, I got nothing.
Oh God, you're the worst.
The week ahead. What do they do? 4 games at Tampa, at Florida, home versus the Islanders, home versus Florida. Kyle,
3-0-1.
JJ,
2-2.
Yeah, I think 2-2 is fair. I don't think they win against the Lightning. They'll beat Florida, and then they'll beat the Islanders, and then they'll lose to Florida. So,
I think that they win all, aside from the home game at Florida, because of course.
Okay. Do you guys have any final hockey-related thoughts?
Go Red Wings. That's good, right?
JJ?
I think go Red Wings is a really good thought.
Well, I was just going to say, I hope you feel better, Graham, and go Red Wings.
Thanks for making me feel like a shitty friend.
Well, you're a bad fan and a bad friend.
Oh, my God.
Then
you're paying for the hotel room in Denver.
I mean, I already did pay for it. I'm still waiting for your half of it.
Well, nothing will change. I'm just kidding. I'll
be Goodbye, everybody.
Good night.
We ain't gonna...
Wait, yeah.